Jy is ingeskakel op Understanding Autism op 100.5 FM. Ons gesels met Cindy Kutsie, sy is die stichter van die Indigo Smiles Autism Foundation. Baie welkom terug, Cindy.
Baie dankie.
Ons gaan vandag 'n bietjie gesels oor gedrag en kommunikasie. Kom ons begin by gedrag.
What are some of the common antisocial behaviors that you find in children with autism?
Children with autism have got many challenging behaviors in terms of certain aspects. In social, they don't do eye contact, which also leads to the normal community not understanding such person's behavior in terms of how they would communicate. They also would show different aggressive behaviors sometimes when they are placed in uneven or unsettled situations. They would hit their head against the wall, for example, which is actually very dangerous because those can cause neurological damages to a child. They also have got physical challenging behaviors where they would hurt themselves or they would hurt peers or family members around them, but they don't always understand as to why those triggers are coming out because the people around them are not actually understanding them. So it causes behavior within community and in social.
I just want to clarify, we're speaking generally. Last week we did discuss how there's a spectrum.
Correct.
And this is behaviors that's more on the extreme side of the spectrum. People on a lighter scale, might not manifest.
They probably might. It depends on the person himself. Yeah.
Why do they avoid eye contact?
It is I also sometimes ask the same question because my son does the same. He does not show eye contact. I think it is because they view life from a different perspective and they would rather auditory listen to understand, where if they make eye contact, their brain goes into different ways and they're not able to always understand. So by them not making eye contact, it's probably easier for them to cope or understand as to what that person is trying to get across. But this happens in younger children quite a bit, where parents would speak with a child and you would see no response to a name or calling them or telling them to do something. There would be just no eye contact. They would participate, but the chances of them just looking like normal people would stare at each other while talking, it doesn't always happen.
Is there something a parent can do to encourage it? Or is that not actually the aim? Do you try to socialize them into changing their behavior? Or do you go the route of accepting it?
I think first you need to understand the reason behind the behavior. Because if a parent don't understand the reason behind the behavior, how do you know what is causing that behavior?
And how do you determine that?
Okay, so for example, a child that would have sensory, auditory-related trouble that would go to places where there are loud music or they don't work within the frequency or that frequency actually disrupts their brain, like a seizure or something like that, that just happens differently, they tend to give behavior. So it is not something. So mom needs to understand that taking my child to such specific place, that is a trigger. So once you understand the trigger of such behavior, it becomes easier to work with such child and you tend to not put him into that uncomfortable situation because it's going to cause a trigger because the child has got no control over his brain doing that at that given moment. So yes, it's understanding the triggers are very important, especially within a family household.
With non-verbal children, how do you cope with a situation if they don't communicate with you? How do you handle that and how do you help the child?
As a parent, it is really difficult because we all expect our children to start speaking. It is a natural thing that we all have as humans. And when the time comes and your child doesn't become verbal like everybody else is around you, it becomes extremely challenging because, first of all, they don't fit into anywhere else that a normal child would fit into society because they are still very young. You don't know where their mind is at because how do you communicate with a 2-3-year-old? You don't really understand where their brain is at that given moment and the learning processes that they go through. So, yes, it becomes, how does a parent deal with such child? It's very challenging. How do teachers deal with such child? If you have no understanding of it, where does one start? So, yes, it is. That is a very, very difficult thing within our families when we have nonverbal children. May they be 3 years old or may they be 18, 20 years old. It is really, really, really difficult.
You often find repetitive behaviors as well. Correct. Is that a form of self-soothing, trying to be in control?
It's also calming them. That is what it's about. So they would stim. So may it be that they rock or flap their hands or jump up and down or wiggle. Every child has got a different way of stimming to bring them back. It helps with their anxiety levels. So when a child starts stimming in a natural situation, it helps them to calm down. So that is their way of protecting themselves, if I can put it like that, because nobody else around them might understand. And that is why they're picking up anxiety, because they can feel it. And from that, yes, they would start showing. But also they have got other repetitive behaviors in terms of constant head banging. That is where the dangerous side comes in, where it's the miscommunication between a child, a parent, a sibling, and that child would go and either crawl into a little corner and literally either bite himself unto the point that somebody can understand, but I'm biting myself because nobody is understanding what I'm trying to say. They also have those kinds of behaviors. So understanding the triggers helps to curb those behaviors within such child.
That must be very stressful for a parent to see happen.
Yes, it is. So when you're driving in your car and all of a sudden somebody comes past you and their music is just blasting, you get that instant fright. That is what happens. How do you cope that? How do you control it?
You mean that is what happens to the child?
Correct. How do you control that natural behavior? Because your brain didn't understand what just went past you. So therefore, your body had... How do you? So yes, that is very difficult to... Once you find the triggers, you can actually start working within those things. Because, use an example, my child does not cope with too much sensory, auditory overload. So I have learned when I go to stores, I don't take my child with, unless it's a store where I can hear that my auditory can cope with it. So I had to take myself as a mom and try and understand what sets my child off. Is it the truck driving past? Is it the people playing music? Is it the vibration that comes through from a music box, that vibration that you get on the floor? Is it the beepers at counters within shops? What triggers him? And once I realized that as a mom, I've started looking at it and say, why should I punish my child to go there? Because I understand it's hurting him. So the way that I personally have been trying to help my own son is when my dad and my husband has been working in the garage, Troyden would be around, and slowly but surely he's been getting used to those power tools. So instead of running away now, he would be around, but outside of the garage, still close his ears, but he would observe. So in another, do it for another year, 2 years, he might be there without closing his ears. And maybe once he's an adult, he might then be able to work with such equipment because his auditory levels is able to deal with it. So it had to take that and on slow levels make it understand that the body shouldn't just freak out. But sometimes it does.
From a parent and teacher's viewpoint, you have to learn about auditory levels. You have to learn about situations and all kinds of emotional triggers so that you know what to look for in the child.
Correct. It's also the conditions that we spoke about. Because if a child's got anxiety, sensory, auditory, ADHD, all of those things would lead to triggers. So a child that's got ADHD and can't sit still, they have triggers. We see it daily. We just see it as sometimes bad-behaved children instead of a child that actually cannot cope at that given moment, because we as adults, we have feelings, we have bad days, we get headaches, we feel sick, we don't want to do something for the day. And sometimes we forget our kids are just like us, and that makes the difference. So going down to your child's level and actually putting yourself into your child's shoes and asking that question, but why is he doing that? It starts giving yourself as a parent the questions and the answers that you need to go and find or that you're looking for.
Another one is sometimes with some children, certain kinds of clothing.
Correct. Yeah, that's texture. So mine, one of those as well. He can't wear shoes. I don't understand what it is about shoes. I still haven't crossed that one. But yes, clothing is a big matter. Some will wear only longs. Some will wear only shorts. Some will wear thick jackets to protect themselves. Others will cope with earphones on to actually drive out the outside world's noise, so they are actually one with themselves. There's a lot of things I've heard in terms of clothing that I don't really know how to curb that one at that moment. I'm just going with the flow. If he doesn't want to wear something, I don't force, because he probably understands why he doesn't want to wear it, especially sometimes you'll hear normal families say, the children needs to put on jackets, and the kids will say, but mom, I'm not cold. Just because you're cold doesn't mean that I'm cold. It's sort of the same thing, that you sort of have to give them grace and allow for them to make their own little choice, because if they are cold, probably they will go and find a solution or try and show you that they are cold in that sense. So yes, just like allow for them to also be people and express themselves.
Which brings us to communication, is that children on the autism spectrum sometimes communicate differently.
True be that.
What are some of the ways? You specifically have a nonverbal son?
Correct. My son is nonverbal, so basically they would work a lot on body language. This is something that we don't pay attention to every day. But when you have a nonverbal family member, body language is the one point that would get you from point A to point B to get an understanding, because that is how they show you. So if they have a behavior, it means that you've miscommunicated. When you have completed and that they are happy at the end of the day, you know you have found a way to communicate. So take, for example, a nonverbal child would point to certain things if they want something. Or they would go there physically themselves and they would open the fridge and they would go and look for what they want. So they might stand there for 5 minutes to go through every single item until they decide. So a lot of families, they would be very harsh because, yes, we've got load shedding and all of those things and we're trying to protect our fridges. So we sort of cut them short in their communication. So we don't allow for them the time period they need to get such item or show us what they need, because they need a little bit longer maybe. So that is where the miscommunication. So allowing the child to show in their own time actually helps. He would take my hand and walk to wherever he wants to. And then sometimes he would not point. So it's mom's responsibility or dad's responsibility to go through the list. Start at A and end at Z. Whatever is in front of you, and you will find the answer. But it doesn't help you get the frustration and keep on saying no, no, no. because no doesn't mean anything to them.
They sometimes also use language in an unconventional way.
Ekalaya is when children repeat certain words. So you would hear a lot of the children make certain sounds or noises, or they repeat certain phrases wherever they've heard it, and they would just repeat it.
Without understanding what it means.
Correct.
But seeing what the reaction is when they say it.
Something like that. Like my child's got the same thing. He's got it with the fire truck and the ambulance and the police car. He can mimic the sirens. So he would just walk around the house and constantly mimic the sirens. And for what reason, I don't understand, but he does. Or he would refer to himself as a third person. Okay, he would ask for water, but not the way that we would ask for water. And that's something else that parents don't always understand. So he would go, drinks water, meaning talking to you, like as if you need to drink water, but meaning he's actually asking for himself. So that is where a lot of the therapies also comes in, that we can bring in something like mirror play. Put them in front of the mirror so that they can understand that they are a person. They need to see themselves. They are just living inside of the body, and that is also where communication, because the moment that they realize they have a mouth and that is where things are coming out, they start paying attention to these things. And it could also help them to start referring to themselves as the third person. But yeah, ekulaya, there's many ways that children would do it, but sometimes they don't understand the phrases that they use, or they would say just sorry for no reason, although somebody else did something, they would sort of take it upon themselves, or they would just constantly repeat.
Another challenging behavior for parents can be picky eaters.
Correct.
So I don't want to go too much into nutrition today, but I think everybody our age grew up with this kind of,
if you don't eat this, you're not eating today.
That's very true. Try and get that right with a child that's on the spectrum sometimes. Some families do have that they get that right, and other families really struggle. So basically, yeah, they are picky eaters, but that is also because of their sensory challenges. They won't eat certain food items because of the textures, the taste, the smell. You might find that they smell their food before they even bring it close to their mouth. And that is also one point that they just won't eat at all. Or it's the visual, or it's the fact that the food is mixed together. They want it separate. It should not touch. It's an OCD. So having a child with nutritional challenges and being a picky eater, it also comes down to mom doesn't really know what to do in the household, because it's a constant struggle that the child would not eat the family meal. So mom needs to cook two meals. But what do mom cook? Because mom is tired.
How do you communicate with somebody on the spectrum? I mean, from a parent's standpoint and from a teacher's standpoint and from somebody outside of the situation who now need to communicate with an autistic child?
I also think that is going per person, because each child is differently, so they have their own way of communication. And when you meet an autistic child, I think it's up to that person to basically look at it and go, okay, how do you communicate, and very quickly adapt, because that is how you would then connect with such person. Otherwise, it would be very, very difficult because of the limited understanding of autism within our community.
Are there basics that we can fall back on just to test the waters?
Yes, we can. We can communicate in shorter terms, use one or two words. I do communicate like that with my son. I don't use full sentences like we speak now. I would say, go bed, bring blanket, drink water. Eat food. It's a basic understanding, yes. Come here, let's go, say bye, and then slowly but surely start introducing more. It's also your tone of voice, because I pick up frequencies. Use less mature language. Use children easy terms to understand. You can hold certain objects in front of your child, let them pick and choose, but as they choose it, also name the items that they can hear what it is and eventually grasp those terms.
Ons gesels met Cindy Kutsie, sy is van die Indigo Smiles Autism Foundation en Understanding Autism, 'n weeklikse program op 100.5 FM. Baie dankie vir jou tyd. Ons maak vir jou so volgende week.
Thank you very much.